Hey, On Demand listener, this is Meg Malone, VPR's digital producer. Just letting you know that this podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In 1986, Vermont opened a residential treatment and detention facility in a little wooded hollow near the Winooski River in Colchester. It was designed to hold minors who were in need of a secure, locked facility, so minors in the criminal justice system or those in DCF custody who couldn't be released into the general public. In its three-decade history, the population of young people has ebbed and flowed. But last month, the facility was empty for the first time in its history. Some of that is due to changing ideas of what should happen to emerging adults, as they're sometimes called, in the criminal justice system, and other types of facilities where kids in need might go. But Woodside has also faced lawsuits and condemnation for the treatment of teenagers in its care in recent years, and there's been a push to close the facility. The Agency of Human Services is now calling for that closure with the support of Governor Phil Scott, members of the Department for Children and Families, and many advocates for children and minors. In a little while, we're going to look at how norms around child detention have shifted over the years. But first, we'll get an update on the latest news about Woodside from VPR's Liam Elder Connors, who's been reporting on this issue. Liam, it's nice to talk with you.
Thanks, Jane.
So Woodside was empty in November for the first time in its history. Why was that, and how did we find out about it?
Well, so it's been – the population there has been dwindling this for the for months now. That's what DCF has said. And it was actually only empty for a very brief amount of time. A few days after it was empty, there were two kids that were placed in the facility again. So it was just this kind of point in time that there weren't any children there. But what – it represents is, I think, what you mentioned, the changing norms around how kids are put into places like Woodside, and that there are more treatment facilities in the rest of the state where they're being put. And a lot of the times they're only being put in Woodside for a short period of time. So some of those things contributed to the decreasing population. And there's also been some lawsuits around the treatment of children at Woodside as well.
When we say that the population has been decreasing in recent years, can you give us a sense of that? I mean, it's a 30-bed facility. It wasn't like there were 30 kids in there at the beginning of October and then at the end of November, zero. So this has been a long time coming.
Right. It has not been operating at full 30 kids in the facility for a while now. And even if you look at in April, there was an average of about 10 kids there. And by August, it's been five or less. And so really just even in that short period of time, you've seen a decrease in the average daily population by that much. So there's really, frequently not more than two or three kids being held there at a given time.
You mentioned lawsuits and other problems that Woodside has been having. The federal government has been looking at Woodside. Let's tackle the lawsuits first. What are the lawsuits alleging, and are there any currently pending?
Sure. So there are two main lawsuits this year, and the first one was filed in April by the Defender General's office, and that was on behalf of an unnamed 17-year-old who was held at Woodside. And in that lawsuit, there are allegations that that this individual was held on the ground with a knee in his back, allegedly cutting off his ability to breathe and speak, causing pain and swelling of his joints. And so the Defender General's office was saying that Woodside needs to stop using these restraint techniques that cause pain and this mode of this use of force and restraint system that actually isn't a nationally recognized model. It was one that was developed internally. And so that was the first lawsuit that was filed this year, and it ended up being dismissed because that one juvenile was discharged from Woodside. And there's a second, as you mentioned, federal lawsuit that was filed by Disability Rights Vermont, which is a protection and advocacy group here in the state. And they made similar allegations about that staffers were using unnecessary restraint and seclusion and force. And it was a lot of the similar sorts of issues that was brought up in the Defender General's lawsuit, but more broadly and tied in many more instances of this happening over the last few years.
So not tied to one specific person who, if they left, the lawsuit was sort of off the table.
Exactly. It referenced a number of incidents and referenced actually internal regulators of the facility that had raised concerns in 2017 and 2018 about violations of regulations of cruel, severe, and unnecessary practices at the facility.
And has this put Woodside's federal funding in jeopardy?
So Woodside already was not getting federal funding. A few years ago, the federal government said that you can't get federal funding anymore because you're not actually operating as a treatment facility that would mean you get the federal funds. So they're already not getting those funds. And it kind of plays into this larger critique that Woodside is despite being billed as a therapeutic center, it really acts more like a jail. The physical space feels like a jail, and it's really hard to operate in a way that's not like a jail when your facility is basically a jail.
Liam, just about exactly a year ago on this program, the Department for Children and Families Commissioner Ken Schatz said that declining populations and the problems that you're talking about at Woodside had led him to explore the possibility of closure, but he wasn't recommending it at the time.
I did talk with our staff, with our other partners within the Agency of Human Services and other community providers and stakeholders, and basically pretty much everybody agreed we in Vermont, for a relatively small number of youth, do need a secure facility. So I've said quite publicly that I do believe we continue to need Woodside.
All right. So that was Ken Schatz in December of 2018. Now, he testified before the legislature in January that he was open to the idea of closing Woodside and building a new secure facility. He is now on board completely with this idea of closure. And so is Governor Phil Scott and the Agency of Human Services Secretary Mike Smith. DCF and the Department of Corrections both fall within the broad scope of AHS. Liam, what changed in the last year that has led to this widespread administrative support for closure?
When I spoke to Commissioner Schatz last week, right after the announcement, he said it's the dwindling population. That's the reason why they've been watching this population go down drastically, and said this is the reason why we are going to be recommending that the legislature close Woodside. He wouldn't talk about the lawsuits. He said that those didn't have any play in the decision. But, you know, the population has gone down a lot this year, and there have been these lawsuits. So the department says those didn't play a role in this decision. It's just the population.
And did Schatz talk to you about what he sees as a replacement for Woodside for young people who are in need of therapeutic, secure, and potentially forensic treatment?
He said, you know, they're still figuring that out. They're looking at potentially putting out a request for proposals to other residential treatment facilities in the state to sort of see what options they might be able to put out with. But I think they're still kind of figuring it out and seeing what could come next.
Not everybody is on board with this. As I mentioned, the Scott administration is, from Phil Scott on down through AHS and through the Department for Children and Families. But VT Digger reported that Steve Howard, executive director of the Vermont State Employees Association, is not in favor of closing Woodside and said this would be a failed idea and referenced the mental health system. So what happens next in terms of whether or not Woodside is closed and what the procedure is for making that happen?
I mean, the legislature still has to sign off on the closure of Woodside. So there's that whole process. I'm sure there'll be hearings. There'll be testimony from the union and from people at DCF, the Defender General's office. So that still has to happen. And in the meantime, Woodside is still open. Children can still be placed there. And there's still this ongoing federal lawsuit that is being worked out. You know, a federal judge has told Woodside they need to make changes. Disability Rights Vermont is still pushing for those changes to happen. DCF says they're still working on those. So there are a number of moving pieces that still need to be locked down before Woodside is closed.
That's Liam Elder Connors, who's been updating us on the latest information about Vermont's only juvenile detention facility known as Woodside. Liam, thank you very much for talking with us.
You bet.
We have a link to Liam's reporting at vpr.org. Today, we are looking at our changing ideas about children in detention and how Vermont has gone from building a 30-bed locked residential facility for juveniles to calls for its closure over the last three decades. Joining us now is Marshall Paul. He's Deputy Defender General and Chief Juvenile Defender for the state of Vermont. Marshall Paul, welcome to Vermont Edition. Nice to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Jane.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Woodside and its closure. And the first thing I'd like to hear from you is just your reaction when you heard the news that Woodside had hit that zero population mark. What did you feel and think?
It was exciting. I mean, it is just a moment in time, and it's something that we had been sort of anticipating for a while because, as was discussed earlier, the numbers had been dwindling for quite some time. But it is exciting to get down to that zero number. It really means that we've done a really good job in Vermont of finding really appropriate placements for kids that are not locked placements and getting kids the treatment that they need in the most appropriate facilities, to the point where we've managed to get our secure detention population down to really what I would say is a kind of a marginal number.
Why does having zero population in Woodside mean? I mean, trace that cause and effect for me. Why you think that having nobody in Woodside necessarily means that we're doing a better job at finding placements for kids who are in trouble.
Sure. I mean, we know that there's a lot of – there's been a lot of studies done that have shown that the most effective treatment for kids who are involved in the justice system is done outside of secure facilities and is done in very specialized facilities. And we also know that the more severe and the more restrictive that a facility is, the less effective the treatment that's provided there is going to be. And that's really been – you know, that's a topic that's been studied to death by social scientists, and it's something that really has proven to be true across all different settings with all different types of juvenile offenders and with all different you know, in all different states and in all different settings. It's really a detriment to the treatment process to do it in a very restrictive setting, which is not to say that there aren't sometimes a need for a restrictive setting just to get somebody out of a crisis state and into a situation where they can be treated, but it's not the best place to provide treatment.
Can we look back to when Woodside was built? It opened in 1986, obviously was built before that, had to be approved before that. So in the early 80s, what was the thinking about why a facility of this type was needed in Vermont?
Well, Woodside really came directly out of a single, really horrific case from 1981, the case with Louis Hamlin and Jamie Savage. It was a really brutal sexual assault and murder case. The two offenders in that case were – one was 15 years old and one was 16 years old. And they were really equal participants in the assault, but they were treated very differently because of their ages and because of the way that the juvenile laws were written at the time. And the difference in how they were treated and just sort of the horrific nature of their offense led the legislature to make a real lot of changes, made a lot of changes to our laws about juvenile jurisdiction, meaning – which kids, you know, kids of what age and kids who are accused of what types of crimes are in the juvenile system versus the adult system. And it also caused the state to look at increasing its capacity for holding kids in a secure facility, which ultimately led to the construction of Woodside, which was a 30-bed facility where in the past, you know, the secure capacity for kids in our state was really handled by the juvenile detention unit over at the state hospital in Waterbury, which I believe that was like a 7-bed facility. So this was really, you know, it more than quadrupled the state's capacity to hold kids in a secure setting.
And was that in line with what was happening nationally in the early 80s in terms of thinking about sentences for juveniles and how to incarcerate and or rehabilitate them? I mean, was Woodside sort of a piece with the nation's thoughts on that?
Very much so. There was a trend starting in sort of the mid-80s and continuing through the late 90s where the rates of juvenile incarceration just skyrocketed. I mean, if you look at a chart, the line for juvenile incarceration rates nationwide went nearly vertical, and that was really reflected in Vermont as well. And that was due to a number of factors, a lot of which was there was – at the time, there was increasing rates of juvenile crime, and there was not a lot of information about what the best way to handle that is. You know, a lot of what we now take for granted in the juvenile justice world hadn't even been discovered yet by that point. So it really was something, it was a reflection of a national trend, and it was a reflection of a trend that was really guided by sort of a very kind of reactionary thinking without a lot of good data or research to support it.
We were talking earlier about some of the thoughts from state leaders on this idea of closing Woodside, whether it's a good idea or not a good idea. And we heard from VT Digger reporting that the Vermont State Employees Association Executive Director Steve Howard was not on board with this. Steve Howard is calling in now. Steve, you wanted to share your thoughts in person on this concept?
I do. Thank you, Jane. So I just think it's really important for your callers to understand that the kids who have been in Woodside have received really high-quality care from really well-trained and compassionate staff. And in fact, Woodside is ranked by Quality Control Program of the Department of Justice as in the 99th percentile in terms of the quality of care that we provide to these kids. And I think it's really important to know that just a few months ago, the population at Woodside was much higher. We had a bigger population there. I think our concern that really is that Vermont's about to repeat the history of the mental health system. And I heard Marshall's argument. It was the same argument that was made when we built a hospital in Berlin that was inadequate for our needs. And it led to people being piled up in emergency rooms all across the state. So if people really are interested in what the frontline workers, the people who are actually taking care of these kids, the only facility in the state that cannot refuse kids, that doesn't turn their backs on kids, I urge them to go to our website, vsca.org. There's a letter posted there from the employees who take care of these kids, some folks who have worked there for almost 40 years, taking care of kids that other folks rejected.
So, Steve, let me ask you, though, there have been lawsuits, as we talked about with Liam, about the care and treatment of children. But let's take as a given for the purposes of this conversation that the people who are working at Woodside have kids' best interests at heart and are doing good jobs to care for the children in their care. That may not necessarily mean that keeping Woodside open is the best thing for Vermont's children or for the state of Vermont as it thinks about juvenile justice and juvenile detention and juvenile therapeutic treatment. So what is your argument for why Woodside is the best option for Vermont to keep open, not just because people work there and have children's best interests at heart, but why is that the best thing for Vermont's kids?
Well, I think that's a very good question. So first of all, there's no doubt that the current facility has been underinvested in by the state of Vermont. We need a better Woodside. And just a few months ago, the Scott administration was in favor of a better Woodside, one that has had a much more therapeutic environment, that wasn't a locked facility, that had a step-down component, but also had a detention facility for folks who do need to be locked up. What we really believe is that the argument that the community or community-based organizations and out-of-state placements, because let's be clear, we're going to start sending kids out of state like we have been, that is not going to be adequate to the demand. That was the same argument that was made about the mental health system that led to some of our most vulnerable Vermonters being piled up in emergency rooms. We don't want to see that with our kids. We think the state should invest in a better Woodside. The proposal that the administration had just months ago is the answer to our problem. We need public infrastructure. We need to keep this team at Woodside together because they have been producing positive results for these kids.
That's Steve Howard, Executive Director of the Vermont State Employees Association, advocating for changes to Woodside, but not its closure. We also got a note from Michael, who writes in and says, as a former clinical supervisor at Woodside, it's both disheartening and not surprising to hear of its imminent closure. Not surprising because the system of care in place for adjudicated youth in the state's custody has been crumbling for years. It's difficult to provide treatment and rehabilitation to adolescents with significant mental health issues, criminal thinking, and/or extremely violent behaviors. Adequate funding is unavailable and the facility itself is deplorable. The closure is disheartening because there is an abundance of skill, compassion, and empathy in a majority of the youth counselors working at Woodside. These folks make innumerable sacrifices in both time and often their own physical, emotional, and psychological safety to do what's best for these kids. Vermont will continue to see young people that need the extremely high level of care the facility purports to offer. Sending these kids out of state seems fiscally unsustainable and irresponsible. The state needs a modernized facility under new leadership to appropriately care for what we like to call, quote, the best kids under the worst circumstances. Marshall Paul, Deputy Defender General and Chief Juvenile Defender, you've heard Steve Howard's thoughts and Michael's thoughts as a former clinical supervisor at Woodside. What do you think?
You know, I think that there's not— To begin with, I would say there's a few really important points to keep in mind. One is that there's no magic to a locked door. All over the country, a lot of the most intensive, very serious therapeutic interventions with the most high risk, highly unstable kids are happening in non-secure facilities. And there's studies showing that doing that work in a non-secure setting, if you can, is a lot more effective than doing it in a secure setting. And I think that that's something that we've seen not just in these sort of, you know, nationalized studies, but also just in our experience here in Vermont, that Vermont, and this is something that I give DCF a lot of credit for, is that recently they've done a good job of developing a lot more specialized placements around the state of Vermont that are really suitable for the kids that in the past had been winding up at Woodside, not because it was necessarily the best place for them, but because there was no other place for them. And that, you know, in the
where
past—
Where do they go now?
That was—
If
well,
not Woodside.
So there's placements all over Vermont that range from what we would look at and describe as like a staff secure treatment facility, meaning that they have 24/7 awake overnight staff, you know, very closely supervising kids in, you know, in a therapeutic setting, to group homes that are a little bit less secure than that, to, you know, therapeutic foster homes where foster parents who are specially trained can provide some of the same, you know, maybe not the clinical treatment, but the social supports, the particularized social support that these kids need. And then also an increase in the state's capacity to provide care for kids in their homes and in their communities, not by placing them in another home, but by simply wrapping them with services in the homes that that they live in. And we know that that's a lot more effective, and we know that that's a lot more appropriate and humane. And I think that the state has done a really good job of developing those types of placements, and that's lessened our reliance on Woodside. And as far as out-of-state placements go, you know, I'm always quick to be sort of suspicious of out-of-state placements because I think that there can be bad out-of-state placements. But we're a very small state, and a lot of the time, an out-of-state placement is actually a better placement than an in-state placement. You know, for example, Vermont uses probably our most common out-of-state placement is to send kids to programs that are operated by Beckett in New Hampshire. And a lot of those, you know, if you have a kid who's in, let's say, White River Junction, who needs to be taken out of their home and needs to be in a place that can provide them with, you know, closer supervision and some services and some therapeutic services, it's going to be a lot better to send them right over the river to a Beckett program that's 20 minutes away in New Hampshire than it is to send them, for example, to a program in Bennington that's going to be a few hours away. So just the fact that a placement is an out-of-state placement, you know, that's certainly something that's worth paying attention to and worth being concerned about, because we do know that kids do better when they are closer to their communities. But in a small state like Vermont, a lot of times an out-of-state placement actually keeps you closer to your community, closer to your family, gives you more opportunity to integrate into the community, gives you more opportunity to have visits from your family than a similar in-state facility would be.
Listeners, do you have any experience with Woodside Juvenile Rehabilitation Center? Are there thoughts that you have or questions that you have that spring from your own family's experience that you'd like to share? Our number is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Catherine writes on Facebook, any facility that houses juveniles must approach treatment from the standpoint of healing from trauma. No child commits crimes against another, violent or otherwise, without themselves knowing some sort of trauma. The punitive measures that characterize the juvenile justice system are not only ineffective but cruel. There must be an evolution within the system. Maybe one day soon we can call it juvenile care and treatment system, and maybe Vermont can spearhead this initiative to treat children like children. Ben writes, though, on Facebook, the cold hard facts of the matter is there are people, some who are children, currently in our society who are sociopaths and psychopaths. They can't be rehabbed. We will always need a safe place for them away from society at large. And let's get another comment in here before we go to the Department for Children and Families from Elizabeth, who's calling in from Jericho. Hi, Elizabeth. What are your thoughts today?
Hi, Jane. I'm concerned that the one department that is not included in this conversation is the Department of Mental Health. I think you're focusing on a building rather than the job that can happen in the building. I'm a guardian ad litem. I've seen over the years a couple of my children have been at Woodside and have had very effective, compassionate treatment there. At one point, there was both a therapeutic wing and a detention wing. If there is some, I don't care what the building is, you can take the locks out of the doors, but we have a building and we have a lot of children in this area, in the Chittenden County area, which is the most populous in the state. And as the previous caller said, all of these children have endured terrible trauma, and a lot of the staff, either because they were selected for that or by just dumb luck, the staff was very tuned into that and were very compassionate. If we could have a facility where all the children are treating these children, that would be terrific. If there are therapeutic needs that could be better filled elsewhere, well, we'll send the kids elsewhere.
Got your point, Elizabeth. Thank you. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. And certainly mental health care, a big part of this, and certainly a big part of what happens to children these days. But you're right. It is partly a conversation about what is the purpose of Woodside and is there care that's being done in other places and what needs to be done for young people and kids. So, Elizabeth, taking your point, as we continue this conversation, let's bring Christine Johnson into the conversation. She is the Family Services Division Deputy Commissioner for the Department for Children and Families. Christine, thanks for being with us as well.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, Elizabeth says, I don't care where it is, but we need to have mental health treatment and care for kids. Catherine says you need to be thinking about trauma and trauma treatment. But then Ben wrote in to say, look, there are going to be needs to have children in a locked facility forever. So what is DCF's standpoint on whether that facility should be Woodside? And if there is a need for a locked facility that's not Woodside, where would it be?
Well, thank you. I think that Catherine and Elizabeth, they made excellent points. And I think that, you know, we know that we will always have a need to serve some young people in a really high-end capacity, such as Woodside. But I think what we've seen over the last really several years, the last 3 years, there have been a significant decline in both youth crime and delinquency filings in Vermont. So here we sit with a $6 million program that is Woodside, and we're seeing, you know, 0 to 5 youth. And I just don't think that that's a sustainable model. We do know that we have been really working hard, and Marshall mentioned this, we've been working really hard to increase our community capacity and think about what is our system of care for young people. And it starts with, you know, far in advance of Woodside, it starts with placement of youth in their communities with their biological families. You know, kids belong in families, and so we want them to be with, if not their biological family, then with their kin or fictive kin. And then when those options are not available, we know that we have foster families and residential treatment when needed. And so I think what we're seeing with having 0 to 5 youth at Woodside is a combination of really working hard to build a system of care in communities, again, where kids belong, but also a combination of the fact that we had, you know, in June of 2016, we had 124 youth in custody because of delinquency. But as of October of this year, we had only 59 delinquent youth in custody. And we're not just seeing that in Vermont. That is a national trend as well. And so I think, you know, we should be really proud that we're taking a hard look at the facility that is Woodside and thinking about, you know, where can we do this differently? How can we do this differently? But I also want to say I am in complete agreement with Steve that our staff at Woodside have been providing incredibly high-quality care. They are well-trained. They are compassionate. And we know that this closure, this proposed closure, is going to have an impact on them. But we, you know, hats off to the staff that have worked there for 33 years, and some of them really close to that, to provide the absolute best care for these young people.
Let's take a call here from Madeline Cunin, who was governor at the time that Woodside was built. Governor Cunin, thanks for calling in today. What are your thoughts?
Well, thank you. Well, it brings back a lot of memories. I was governor at the time that Woodside was built. And the main focus at that time was to avoid placing young people in adult prisons. And there was a need for some facility for 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds, and the emphasis was on treatment, and it was not considered a jail at that time. But things probably have changed. And my big question would be, what is the alternative? You know, if the alternative is incarcerated in an adult prison, I would vote for Woodside to remain open. If the alternative is some assured community care, then of course that is always preferable. But I think we do have to look at the alternatives so that we place young people who have not followed the law in a better setting than they would be in an adult prison. That would be the most harsh sentence if that would be the only alternative.
Well, Governor Kunin, thank you very much for calling in and sharing your thoughts as somebody who had to think about this more than 30 years ago in the creation of Woodside. Marshall Paul, I'm curious for you to put that question from Governor Kunin. You know, if the idea at the time, as she saw it, was to make sure that minors were not going into adult prison facilities, Vermont is making some changes in how it thinks about that question of who is a juvenile for the purposes of adjudication. But then to Governor Kunin's point, you know, where do we go to make sure that they are getting the best care and possibility for a good life as adults?
And I think that's actually, you know, that's one of the things I'm most proud of in terms of the changes that have happened at Woodside and now the eventual closure of Woodside is that that's not happened by relying on the adult system. In fact, we've moved in the exact opposite direction. We've been reducing the population at Woodside and getting kids into really effective, really efficient community-based treatment programs, while at the same time we've been actually, you know, where up until 2016, there was actually quite a few kids under the age of 18 who were being served by the adult correction system. And over the past, I guess, 3 years, we've really, you know, all but eliminated the placement of youth in adult correctional facilities. So right now, there's zero kids under the age of 18 in adult correctional facilities, which is not something that we could say 3 years ago. And we never had a huge number of kids in adult correctional facilities, but there was always, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, there was always 4, 5, 6 kids under the age of 18 who were in the adult jails. You know, we've basically eliminated that, and we've shifted, starting in 2016, kids who were in the adult system into the juvenile system in many more cases. And we've still nonetheless managed to, you know, that those types of policy changes you would look at and you would think, oh, well, that'll lead to more kids going into Woodside. And in fact, we've been able to decrease the population at Woodside while we've also been all but, ending the use of adult correctional facilities to house kids and moving kids from the adult justice system into the juvenile justice system. And I think really it has to do with the fact that what we know about treating kids and about providing services to kids to help them avoid criminal behavior, that's all new to us. That's, you know, people weren't studying that or at least not studying that in a very widespread way up until the, you know, late 80s and 90s. So, I think really what this reflects is Vermont sort of catching up with where the scientific research is and putting kids into community-based treatment programs that are a lot more appropriate and a lot more effective than the sort of more historical models of treatment in a secure facility like Woodside.
So it doesn't sound like, to Governor Kunin's question, that closing Woodside would mean any young people would be going into the adult prison system. Christine Johnson, this is not a fait accompli. The administration would like to see Woodside closed. We heard from Steve Howard with the Vermont State Employees Association earlier. What's the next step for you, for DCF, in terms of figuring out how to operate Woodside in this state of limbo, but then also making sure that your desires are advocated for at the legislative level?
So I think that next steps, you know, we are going to continue to build the continuum, the system of care that we've been building, and look to, you know, what are our options for placing kids in the community. We know that we can't do this alone, and so it relies very much on our system of restorative justice and our balanced and restorative justice programs that really act as a prevention mechanism for a lot of the youth that we work with. We know that we are needing to build a continuum, but also, you know, understand what are the options and what are the needs and what are the exact, you know, to the caller's point about, you know, will we always need a locked facility for some youth? Yes, I think that is very likely. And so we are in the process of issuing an RFP that will provide potential additional secure care in the community in a small type of program, and also potentially adding some additional community supports. So we are mindful that we are continuing to build this continuum of care.
That's Christine Johnson, Family Services Division Deputy Commissioner for the Department for Children and Families. And we've also been talking with Marshall Paul, Deputy Defender General and Chief Juvenile Defender for the state of Vermont. Thanks to both of you for talking about the history and future of Woodside.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you, Jane.